Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Sheila.
Nope.
I'm Dr. Redmond. And I thought I was going to get it right this time.
Ah, it's fine. Nobody's
Yes.
I may correct you, but I never judge you.
Okay.
Oh, God. But anyway, I want to remind everybody, you know, there's lots of doctors in the FBI, right? Like, I don't want to oversimplify this, but it's like, if you have an interest, if you're a medical doctor and have any interest at all in law enforcement, you can get into the FBI no trouble at all. Like, just saying, it's not like it's strange that there's a doctor in the FBI. Just putting that out there.
Okay.
Just saying, what do you call it? Dana Scully was a medical doctor. And you know what she never made anybody call her?
Doctor
Scully.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there. And I just want to point out that the character of Dana Scully, much younger in the first season than he is now on the show. Just reminding everybody. Okay.
I'm sorry.
I know it's a weird thing to obsess over, but I am obsessed with it, and I just have decided to own it. All right, so next up, we got episodes to talk, 907 to 909. Let's get to it.
Okay. Gatekeeper. When three Boston, Massachusetts men are blitz-attacked and strangled to death, the BAU sets out to profile a voyeur who stalks his victims and kills anyone he perceives as a bad influence. Meanwhile, the team rallies behind Rossi after learning his favorite bar is set to be closed due to low business.
It's weird because, and this is going to sound strange, it's not really a meanwhile because that happens afterwards.
Yes.
It's not like anyone's concerned about the bar while they're busy trying to solve the case.
No.
But anyway, this was directed by Matt Gubler. Who, if I didn't tell you it was directed by Matt Gubler, you would have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's his most mediocre episode ever, but it's close. Like, I don't know what he was doing this week. You listened to the commentary, right?
Yeah.
And what were the hints in there about why this was so off-brand for him?
Well,
we didn't love Alchemy, but it had the weird dream sequences. It had, is it Angela Bettis who was in it? But anyway, like, it had a horror celebrity. It had the weird dream sequences. There wasn't much music, but there's a little bit of music. Like, it felt enough like a Matt Gubler episode, whereas this one, you know, it was kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just a regular episode.
Just a regular
Although
episode
it was better. And as I said, I did listen to the commentary, and it's not like there was, I would say it wasn't like there was an awful lot in the commentary. I mean, he did talk about, you know, this was the first time he'd worked with the director, and this is
writer.
The first time he'd worked with this writer. No, no.
He's the director.
Oh, he's the director. Yeah, but there was somebody, the editor. That was
the editor.
It was the first time he'd worked with this particular editor. But he also talked about, normally he likes music, but they have a limited budget for music. And I guess one of his times
he must
have
blown. I feel like that must be code word for, there's a song I specifically wanted and we couldn't afford it. And he then didn't tell it. And I'm sad he didn't tell us what it was. Because it seems like that's what that's code for.
Well, it seems like, I mean, because what it's saying is, okay, we had money, but we had money problems, right?
Yeah. No, they always, and the thing is, it's a show in its ninth season. And the thing about, right, and this is the central economic quandary of making television. Every year, you have to pay the cast more money. Mm-hmm. Every single year. But the show doesn't get more popular every year. At best, a show, I mean, every now and then you get a show that starts off really slow and peaks in season three or four. And then as you go forward, right, the show at best holds those numbers. After season three or four, nothing then becomes a super hit. I mean, again, there are exceptions, but these exceptions are incredibly few and far between. So just as a general rule, you're never going to be more popular than you were in your, like, third season. Right. But as you keep going, you got to pay the actors more every year. That's just how contracts work. But the show's not bringing in more money every year. So every single year, in order to remain profitable, you have to find a way, a thing to cut that isn't the salary of the actors. And you look at something like Community, where they didn't have any music after season two, right?
Yep.
Because you got to find something to cut that isn't the actors. And this could be an example of, in the early days, they had money to spend on, if not Rolling Stones, Rolling Stone soundalikes, and to pay for the Rolling Stone song, right? And by now, he just can't get any song. And it's kind of sad. Like, what is the song in this episode? A nursery rhyme being sung creepily, like the default generic horror soundtrack. You know, it's just not, there's nothing stylish really about it, because it's like he's just going to the well. And I say this, it sounds like I'm being harsh. Later this season, Matt Gubler made two episodes this year, and the second one this season is as Matt Gublerian episode as we can possibly get. There's a black and white scene in that episode.
Yeah. You know,
so it's like, it's not like he's, I'm not saying he's lost it. I'm just saying it is weird seeing a guy who has been the one really artistic voice in the director's staff just abruptly run up against these production issues. And it's kind of sad.
Well, he says that he spent a lot of time casting this.
Right.
He says that he spent a lot of time. All the rest of it, like, yeah, you get the impression if you listen to the that this is a lot of work, and it was what he wanted, and that this, you know, he managed to not have the villains being, not having to watch the villain, the kid being strangled, but rather he uses earlier noir touches, right, by just seeing the guy's legs, so you know he's dead.
Right, okay.
Right, things like that. So he talks about that, but he doesn't particularly talk, right?
About the plot or the story about
or anything. Well, he's you know, I mean, it's really hard. It's just him.
Oh, okay.
Doing the commentary, he just talks about it and what he chose to do, et cetera. So,
huh? Well, I don't know. Me on that one, right? Is that you watch the episode and. Again, I'm pro Matt Gubler. I've been open about really liking his directing. And it's just weird to think of him like, how am I going to do this in a stylish fashion? And if I didn't hear that he would had actually, you know, put that kind of work into the casting, I'm going to just say something. And you tell me if I'm crazy for saying it. This episode, I would say, doesn't feel like a Matt Gubler episode to the point where if you had told me that he is listed as the director because another director, you know, broke their leg 2 weeks before starting it and, like, was it hospitalized and he just had to rush in and do the episode, I wouldn't say that that sounded crazy.
No. And the funny thing is in the commentary, he sort of talks about how he's much more comfortable directing than he is acting. It took him a lot longer to get, you know, and he's directed other things. I don't know exactly.
He's directed some short films.
Yeah, I know.
He's made a movie, though.
No, anyway, I mean, I know that. And there's things on the internet as well that he's done. And
yeah, like little video shorts and stuff.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, but I don't know. But that's, I mean, I'm just saying what he said. But, yeah. I mean, he does make the comment about the music and not having money and, so, you know, that it's very expensive, so you can't blow. And I don't know if he exactly said it, or I got the impression that he blew
a bunch of money in something.
A bunch of money because they only have so much money for music.
Oh, God. And maybe he's talking about the Brad Dourif episode last year.
I think so because he talked about the puppets. It was the Brad Dourif episode.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, where he sort of went through
the whole puppet ballet sequence.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing, like, a visually just a great sequence, but I could see how that would blow a lot of their budget. Well, I hired a contortionist and built a giant rig and bought an expensive song for a 2-minute puppet ballet with a human victim. Like, Yeah, I could see that costing them a bunch of cash and blowing a hole in their budget.
So I think that's why this episode is just a little flat, because it doesn't have that fairy tale feel to it.
No, and that's what he
If I was to say anything, I mean, that's what you expect, you're hoping to get out of Matt Gubler's.
Yeah, you want fairy tales. You want the acknowledgement that this is part of a narrative tradition of horror stories that go back to campfire tales.
Yeah. Right?
That's what he's always been about. That's why his whip, episodes are about witches and monsters and in the puppet thing and, you know, these weird fantasy ideas, right? And I mean, hell, like, he even has, in the puppet episode, the guy even wakes up like Rip Van Winkle as a different person some years later as this weird eternal child. Like, it's, like, he's full of these interesting themes, and there's none of that in this episode.
No. It's like the witch.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah.
The Hansel and Gretel witch.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, he's always his very, done that.
Yeah.
And while there wasn't that clear inspiration in alchemy, even that, again, had those dreamlike elements and the LSD sequences, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was always stuff there. All right, so let's talk about this episode a little, which is, I've never seen sloppier detective work by the Criminal Minds crew, ever. Like, that's never happened.
You see, sometimes I listen to these guys talking and I'm going, okay, do you really mean what you say?
What did they say?
Well, no, I'm just talking. As to just in general, when they're doing commentaries and things, right, it's like,
of course.
Okay, sometimes I know that you have to do this. You're selling. This is your business, but
come on.
But, you know, I mean, he didn't get Rick Dunkel in to do that commentary. And no, this is a very sloppy episode.
It's very
There is, I don't know how they, it's just dumb.
Okay, I just want to point out that in the beginning of this episode, I mean, well, let's just say it. In the beginning of this episode, a guy has just slept with a woman that they just met at a bar. He goes away. He walks out of her apartment building. And we see him, as he walks out of the apartment building, calling his friend on the phone. This is going to be important in a second. So we know that as he left the building, he called his friend on the phone. We see his entire conversation with that friend. While he's talking on the phone, we see the whole conversation, and then we see him get strangled, and the friend calls the cops because he hears his friend getting strangled. And the cops are able to get there immediately, not immediately, but pretty close to immediately, because they trace the cell phone, and they get there. And no one thinks to check the building he just walked out of to see if anybody knows him.
I know.
What was he doing in this neck of the wood? Well, he picked up a lady. He probably picked up a lady. That's they know he picked up a lady, and he was just walking out of her apartment because the friend told them that.
Yeah, he was just walking out of the building.
He
so,
literally said, I just left this girl. He was literally walking out of the building from the girl he was with.
Yeah, because we watch it. If we hadn't watched it, we watch him walking out the building. He doesn't really get to the street.
No, he is killed.
He's dragged
in the alley behind the building.
And yet it takes them 3/4 of an episode to find the building.
And then the next guy is killed friggin' across the street from the building.
And they still can't find the building.
Where could it be?
Maybe that's the fairy tale aspect. It actually is kind of covered, and they can't see it until they get some magic word. And then all of a sudden, it becomes, you know.
By the way, I love this justification. I just want to say, I adore this justification.
all of a sudden, the smoke.
Yes, the fog.
The fog passes.
And suddenly.
And they see the building.
Of course. It had been there the whole time.
It wasn't there.
Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Stupid. No, I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then the whole business with the girl, you know, like.
Oh, I know.
So, because you see her talking and him talking at the same time.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't know his last name. I'm sorry, but
I know.
Okay, maybe the world has changed dreadfully, but
she no, but it's like the idea that she
didn't get his phone number. She doesn't have his name.
The idea that this woman, right, like that they clearly liked each other. They're excited to see each other again. She doesn't have his phone number or last name. Like, that's crazy.
And he signed into the building with her.
Yeah.
Although,
you're right. It's like, he signed into the building. She was obviously standing next to him when that happened. How does she not already know his last name? Oh, God. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know.
But you're right. There's no way, logically, she's not standing right next to him when he signs into the building. She didn't, like, go on ahead while he was signing in. So there's no reason she wouldn't already have his last name. God, this was a terrible episode.
Oh, yes. And a commentary. You know the flowy dress when she goes down to find the name?
Yeah.
Matt Gubler worked with the
costumer.
Costumer to make sure that it was sort of flowy because and stuff because he knew that she would end up, you know, going over the falling down. So if you wanted to look,
while she was falling.
Right. I mean, this was the level of the commentary, which was fine. But now, do you think that he pushed her off?
Of course.
Well, yeah, but Matt doesn't.
What?
Matt thinks that she accidentally fell off.
No, but
that's what he says in the commentary.
Well, apparently the editor got that away from him. Apparently the editor took that away from him.
Yeah,
you
so
can't
maybe
fall
why
over a railing. He's grabbing at her and she's pulling away. And then I'm pretty sure he shoves her.
Yeah, he calls it an accident.
Oh, my
anyway,
God.
So I mean,
it's an accident to the extent that he never intended to kill her. But
yes. That
doesn't make it an accident.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't make it a capital A accident. Oh, God.
Well, anyway, I mean, I'm just sort of saying this. But I mean, I'm watching it and I'm going, I don't know. It was a tiring episode and I kept going.
Yeah.
This is tiresome. This is boring.
It's a very frustrating episode.
I could have solved this. I think that the whole thing was kind of unnecessary.
Oh, it is.
They
randomly killed off the brother-in-law. Like, seriously? You're also going to kill off the brother-in-law just to make everyone feel worse about themselves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, didn't we have enough kills here?
Yeah. I know. Yeah, there's a brother-in-law.
Well, as you say, you know, the BAU did a crappy job this time. I mean, they didn't save anybody. They couldn't even figure out the guy's walking out of a building and gets killed in front of the building, and they still can't figure out that the first thing they should be doing is sending the cops door to door
in
this
building. I know.
Who cares about the other two that are somewhere else? You start with this one because you know he just came out of that building and he had just spent an evening
his
with a girl.
His friend said he was calling me right after leaving this girl and he was super excited about her. And he gets killed and dragged into an alley next to a building. Maybe check out that building. Again, I'm not a scientist. Maybe check out that building.
Jeez. I mean, no. I mean, it was just a...
Yeah.
It was it was just a boring episode.
It is. It's not great. And God. By the way,
yes.
I'm not... No. I don't want to be too dark about this or say that the show's trying to say anything too awful, but they established no previous history of mental problems with the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the closest thing we are get to a motive, we get a clear motive, but the motive we say is specifically his wife emasculating him and saying if he was a man,
all of that was just...
What are you doing, episode? And because you didn't give him a history of mental instability or violence, to suddenly say that her saying he wasn't manly enough is what drove him to mass murder? Jesus Christ.
Oh. Yeah, I hated this episode, by
the
way.
It's a bad episode.
Just in case you were wondering,
it's clear. But it's like, we wanted, I mean, basically there's a reason we decided to spend half an hour talking about Matt Gubler and his directing choices instead of this episode. This episode's trash.
Well, it was just, you know, and it's pretty typical about, you know, all of these other things, right?
Yeah.
The whole, I don't know.
Just the way it blames these women. There's no nice way to say it.
Yeah, you know, it's like somehow or another, I mean, that poor girl, well, she shouldn't have gone up looking for the thing. What do you mean?
I know.
I guess. But this woman is so horrible to him. Yeah. Like, I can see that they split up after the child died.
Horrible.
But this is horrible. And it's just like, I suppose they must have thought that this was the supposed to be the fairy tale part of it. You know, that this woman was like an archetype of an evil woman.
Maybe, but it's like, that seems to fly in the face of the point of the rest of the episode.
Well, yeah, I know, but.
No, but you're right. It's like, the real headline should be, by the way, your brother just got murdered. That's not coming up at all.
Yeah. No, she should be screaming at him for killing her brother.
Scream in shock and horror about her brother just being friggin' murdered 5 feet away. But no, she just talks about how he's not a man. What is going on with this episode?
Well, it's boring.
Yeah, it's boring.
And it's bad.
It's just a terrible episode.
I mean, maybe
I'm
going to
take
Goobler
back what I said. It's Matt Goobler's worst episode.
It is his worst episode. And I think, the one thing you could say is maybe he had to do it. Maybe he was just assigned it and that was that.
Yeah,
right?
Like he wanted to do his episode.
Like maybe he's lying about spending all that much time on it.
Who knows? No, but I know. I think it could be an assignment that it's like, okay, well, we also need you to do this episode. And I mean, maybe he did prep it, but he certainly didn't work with a writer he liked. He didn't work with a director he liked. And the result is an episode that's impossible to like.
Yeah.
So yeah, Matt, you know, not a good show.
No, and I don't care what you say in your commentary.
Yeah, I know that you want to be positive in your commentary. This is not a good job. All right. So let's move on to the next episode.
Yeah. Okay. So this is The Return. When a Chicago, Illinois teenage runaway dies after gunning down three civilians at a diner, the BAU determines the shooter was manipulated into carrying out the attack and is a member of a homegrown terrorist group. Meanwhile, Morgan discovers his latest romantic interest, Savannah, takes her job just as seriously as he does.
That's right. It's the first episode, I guess, with Derek Morgan's wife.
Oh, wait a sec. Before we go.
Before we go
away from Gatekeeper, I should just tell you, in the commentary, he talks about how he loved, the best thing, like, he gets the most excited in this commentary when he is talking about the bar at the scene at the beginning and the fact that he specifically got this karaoke guy.
Yeah.
Who's, I guess, known for karaoke, to do the karaoke stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was his real special. He
his
seems more excited
by
about
than anything else in the episode.
Yeah, in the episode, yeah. And then the afterwards where they all get together and go to the bar. No, they all should have bought the bar and turned it into David's got enough money. He could have bought the bar and
money.
Turned
just
it.
Just buy the bar. Run it. I'm sure it's not turning a profit, but David, do you need it to turn it a big profit?
No.
And also, like, put up a bunch of FBI stuff and encourage the FBI to make this a bar.
Their FBI bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it an FBI bar. It's right by the military base. Come on.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That's the weird part is, you're right. The first time I watched it, I'm like, why doesn't he just buy the bar?
Yeah, well, I had forgotten that he didn't buy it, and I just assumed he would buy it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's
I thought,
where
oh, yeah,
story
this is the one where he buys the bar.
Going,
well,
right? But no. No, he's just like, oh, well, times change. This place that was responsible for 50% of my happy memories with my first wife, just going to let it go away, even though I have the resources to preserve it.
Ringo Starr came here, for God's sake.
Ringo Starr came here once, and that's how we're friends. Like, okay.
Yeah. And this is, you know, so anyway, but that's just a little
Yeah, no, that's such a minor thing. I thought I would bring that up
only because of the commentary, because it doesn't
matter. About how he loved the bar so much. Yeah, because you're right. It's completely.
And he loved the karaoke guy, what it was.
Yeah, right? He just loved that karaoke guy so much.
Yeah, and how he's at the end scene as well, right? So anyway, in the back.
There you go.
Okay, so let's
get on the same day. But anyway, let's get on to this one.
The shot. The return.
The return. All right, so yeah, this is the homegrown terrorist ISIS one. You know, what if a guy was brainwashing kids and turning them into child soldiers in America the way they do all the rest all around the world? And it's a pretty upsetting idea. And it's interesting because it manages to, though, at the same time, be kind of hopeful. A little hopeful.
Well, yeah, it is a little bit.
I mean, because they do point out that it's like literally it does not take that much to talk the one kid out of suicide.
Well, yeah, but he's the latest one, right?
He's the newest one. Yeah,
he's the newest one, so he hasn't been indoctrinated as much. He says, you know, when she says, "Do you want to go home?" he says, "Yes." Whereas the other guys, I'm not sure, kind of, because even the one just can't stop himself, right? It's just too much. No. And it's how they do it.
It is.
You know, it's how the shooter does it. I don't know that this is just a run-of-the-mill episode. There's nothing really special about it. It's a horrible topic.
Oh, it is.
It's just horrible, that poor kid sitting in the dining room when you find these kids have been, you know, abducted. And then, you know, and I like the working through that he keeps abducting younger children because
they're easier to manipulate, the older kids.
Easier, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because he needs to completely brainwash them. And so you have to destroy a kid's complete sense of what's normal. And you can't really do that with a 15 or 16-year-old the same way you can with a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that bothered me, though, is how they figure out that it's he's targeting cops.
I don't
buy that at all based on the bar.
Here's
what gets me, right? He shoots four people.
Yeah.
And then the cop shoots him. And I'm like, but you were there to kill the cop. I understand that you have to kill the waitress first because she saw the gun. Like, I get that, but you're there to kill the cop. And you know he's a cop. Why didn't you shoot the cop second?
Yeah. No. Like, I agree. I don't know why the first guy shot all those other people unless he didn't know which one of them was a cop.
Except we watch him overhear that it's a cop.
Well, yeah, I know.
And he doesn't shoot the place up until the cop walks in.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's been there for a while.
Yeah, I know, but still, you know, I mean, I still go, okay, well then why didn't, when the cop walked in, he didn't get up and just shoot the cop and then kill himself?
But maybe if the cop had been in uniform, he would have shot him right away, right?
Okay.
Maybe, but because it's a plainclothes cop, he has to hear the diner, the waitress talking about the fact that it is a cop before he knows. But even then, he still knows that that guy's a cop. Why is that guy not his target? And the only reason is because they don't want, they want the kid to have been killed and there to be some mystery. But the fact is, there's no reason for the kid to behave the way he did. Like, and had he just killed the waitress and then shot one other person, it's this weird situation where you want him to get killed and then not be able to interrogate him, right? And so you want him to get shot by the cop on scene. But if he immediately turns his gun on the cop, like, you can still get, I know they want multiple deaths and they want it to be bloody because it's Criminal Minds, right? Mm-hmm. But you can still get multiple deaths by having him shoot the waitress and, like, there being a couple standing up between him and the cop and him just starting to shoot. And then the cop wouldn't immediately realize he was the target. But no, he shoots the waitress, shoots three other people who aren't between him and the cop, and then turns his gun on the cop
Well, and what I don't understand is why the cop hadn't gotten his gun out and shot him.
Right, the minute he shot
almost immediately after he shot the waitress.
Yeah, it is weird that he had time to shoot anybody else. Fundamentally, I think it is a solid episode.
Yeah, like, well, as I said,
the stuff
all you
about
had
brainwashing
to do.
Really works. It's well written. It's well handled. I mean, the fact that it's, you know, this corrupt cop who is just, you know, it's beyond entitled, who is like so ridiculously sure that he has complete moral certitude is the term I'm looking for.
Yes.
Like he just completely believes that he is in the right and everybody is out to get him and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, I totally believe that that kind of guy would escalate to this kind of action. Like that just makes sense to me, you know?
After his partner died.
Yeah. After his partner died, and the two of them were thrown off the force for being terrible cops. Mm-hmm. And then his partner, you know, he would blame the cancer on like the way the guy's life was ruined. And honestly, here's something they didn't even mention, but they could have, that he lost his medical benefits would have been a really good reason to blame the police department. Cause that's the kind of crap that happens. Cause America has such a terrible healthcare system. If you get fired, you lose your medical benefits. So he could actually blame in a very real way his partner's death from this cancer that could have been treated, for example, on the department for firing him.
Yeah.
Which would have been a nice little drive-by to take a swipe at America's terrible medical situation.
Yeah. But these people may already have health insurance, so it doesn't dawn on them to take a drive-by.
Well, no, I mean, all the people who work on the show have health insurance. They're employees of CBS.
Yeah.
Or the Mark Gordon Company or whatever. But yeah, no, they all have health insurance. But yeah, like you can, but the problem is the day you get fired is the day you lose your health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, not even the day you get fired. The day you go on strike is the day you lose your health insurance. As the auto workers found out this year, like go on strike. Oh, well, as long as you're on strike, you don't have health care. What? How is America so bad at this?
Well, yeah. Then again, we may be going on strike, but we don't have health care, so it doesn't matter. We don't have extra benefits like other people who...
No,
because we don't have drugs aren't paid for in Canada.
No, I'm not saying we're perfect, but I'm saying that if we have a medical emergency, if you get cancer tomorrow, the government will see to that.
Yes.
that's the good thing. And whereas in this situation, if this guy got fired and lost his pension and then got cancer, that's a death sentence right there. There's nobody to help him out. Like there's no system to aid him in any way, shape or form. And that's could have been a great, you know, little extra message to put in there. I understand why they didn't. That's not what the show's message is.
Yeah, because it's a drive-by.
Yeah, it's just a drive-by.
We do that all the time.
We do. No, it's interesting when you watch the episode that they actually do some like solid stuff with the child soldiers, with the girl who I thought looked a little young, but you know what? Maybe at the police station is distracted. But my question is, and this is, I honestly don't know this because it seemed weird when I was watching the episode. Do they not have like metal detectors to get into a police station?
Well, it is 2013, so yes, you would think so.
Because, you know, it's a famous thing that it's like cops don't even walk around. I know every police station is slightly different, but something we're constantly, we see a lot in police stations is it's like they don't generally just walk around with their guns inside police stations.
No.
Because police stations are full of criminals. Like, they tend to secure their guns when they go into police stations, and they often have... And it's like, because she doesn't have an ID card. She doesn't have any kind of keys. It's kind
how
of
did
crazy
she get in? Yeah.
How far she was able to get in without going through any kind of security.
Yeah, nobody is supposed to think about this, I guess. And this takes place in Chicago, so it had to have been the corruption of North Chicago. But
there you go.
But it is strange because, and if you want to really see how that works, all you have to do is watch The Rookie. Not that I watched it this year yet, but the first year of The Rookie. And that was one of those big things. All those guns get kept separately.
Oh, yeah.
When they leave the police station, they have to go and pick up the guns because they're banked, right? They have to pick up their guns before they go out on the road.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and you will go through huge metal detectors. Yeah. No, it's Los Angeles, but Boston is no cheaper than
Chicago.
That. I mean, Chicago is no...
The last one was Boston, is why you're thinking
about
that.
Yeah, I keep thinking about that.
Totally fine. No, but yeah, it seemed inauthentic to me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But you know what? She doesn't get to blow anybody up, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And by the way, this episode also has one of my favorite things they do, was when they try to put a psychological twist on just the most basic kind of police work, because they're like, he must be doing it about his dead partner. Well, we've searched all the locations. This guy could be hiding, and he's not hiding where. It's like, if he was doing this because of his dead partner, maybe he would set up the soldier training facility in a place that has a connection to his partner. I'm like, no, he would set it up in a place he has access to. And he has access to his friend's cabin who died a couple of years ago. Come on. Don't try and pretend there's a psychological aspect to why he's doing this out of his friend's cabin. He just has a cabin. Come on, show.
He's got a cabin, and it's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, like if he, I mean,
it's
like
isolated.
Everything. You need an isolated cabin to have child soldiers. There you go. Yeah.
And lots of land. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and he had kidnapped a new kid. Ooh.
Yeah.
But they save the kid and everybody's happy.
Yep.
All right, but yeah, like, it's not a bad episode. Like, there's some stuff that bothered us a little, but it's a well-done episode. The psychology works. All the performances are good. Like, just a solid episode all around that, like, if you make those minor couple of tweaks in there, it would have been one of the better episodes of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, it is going to be one of the better episodes of the season, but we wouldn't be damning with faint praise if they had made a couple of fixes.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to their big highlight message episode of the year.
Strange Fruit. When two sets of female skeletal remains are excavated from the backyard of a Virginia house following a drainage pipe explosion, the BAU juggles identifying the victim and delving into the resident's past.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, JJ tries to convince Cruz to tell the rest of the team about, no, it's not their past relationship. It's about their ongoing relationship.
Yeah.
That's what we find out in this episode, that they are on
They're still talking about various spy stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's still
on. And she wants to let the team in. He says, you can't let the team in, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And that is a meanwhile. Way to go. So did Joe Mantegna direct this one?
No, this is someone by the name of Constantine Marks.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it's a very Joe Mantegna-focused episode. And I'm like, it's kind of like, I kind of feel like, how do I put this? I don't know that he would direct one that makes his character, like, it's so Joe Mantegna-focused, you wondered if he directed it, as he has some Joe-focused episodes in the past. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't think he would make David look this bad if he
was,
if he was directing the episode. I don't know if Joe Mantegna's ego could handle that. Again, but you know what? He didn't. So there's your answer.
Constantine Macris and Janine Sherman Berwa wrote it.
And so here's my question to you.
Okay.
Is it weird that the episode that... this is the episode that most directly addresses race in America of any episode they've ever done, basically gives Derek nothing to do. Is that weird? Because try and think of what Derek actually does this week.
No, I'm just trying to think about it in my head, and I'm going, okay, and that's because, of course, the young guy has no use for him.
Yep, because he works for the FBI.
You know, and the father really doesn't have much in the way of use for him either.
Maybe he doesn't really ever interact with the father.
No, he doesn't. He just...
or the mother. He's just not in the episode.
It's just he's supposed to connect with the son.
Yeah. And there's this weird scene. Like, literally all you get is all you get is this little scene where he's there to make Rossi feel bad. Like that's the only thing he does in this episode.
It's an extra
knife to show you that, yeah, people aren't okay with what Rossi did. I mean, Rossi's not okay with what Rossi did, but even his friends are like, Jesus, David. And they give that to Derek to do. But Derek doesn't have anything else to do this week, and it's kind of weird.
Well, and no, the whole... this episode... I suppose it drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the things that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
That, like, when I started this, I'm going, but this is the best episode this week.
Yeah.
In many ways, because it has more punch than the previous episode. than the previous episode. And, well, anything would be better than Gatekeeper. So, yeah, so that makes it the best episode.
But when you go back and you watch it, there's some stuff in there that you wonder why they did those choices.
Like, why there are those choices. Like, it does float. They find the female skeleton. Then they find the other.
The son is super suspicious. But then the minute they find the old skeleton, they know it's the dad. There's no mystery.
Yeah, it can't be. They don't focus. Like, why is it necessary for the son to see his father killing this man?
Yeah, and
like I don't understand
that they immediately decide that the son saw the father kill somebody,
and then the son kind of breaks down
crying, and it's like, why did you think that happened?
Like, nothing possible.
Yeah, but it's like it's never confirmed, but the show acts like it was confirmed.
Acts like it's the truth. Now, is there something that ended up on the cutting room floor?
That must be it, right? There's something from the cutting room floor. A scene where they say that, yeah, he saw it, because they bring it up as a possibility, and then later they full on say to the guy, you know, you made your son watch you kill somebody.
Yeah, like, and I'm sitting
here. That didn't
here
happen?
I'm Did going. That happen? Well, and even when they're talking to the kid, mm-hmm. they're talking to the kid, well, you saw it.
You and saw it happen. I'm like, did he?
Did he? Like, I have no context for believing
he
saw it.
I heard no evidence of that within the episode.
Nothing. The kid doesn't even confirm it. The kid doesn't confirm it.
Nope.
So it's like,
something they cut, right?
When they did this to the kid, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, you're trying to manipulate him to confessing to killing, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was like, no. When I'm watching it and I'm going,
It's weird, right?
It's almost as if it was too much for Janine to write about, and she had to give excuses to people. Like the whole part with Joe Mantegna. Well, first of all, why are you pissed off? Yeah, that's what he would have done when he was the kid. Yeah, I mean, that's the way
high school bullies work. He's a 15-year-old in unbelievably racist Rhode Island.
Yeah, and he's Italian.
And he's Italian.
So yeah. I'm not so sure that you should be
as hard as him on him as you are.
Like he can be as hard on him. Like, I mean, and Derek should have just said, oh, Dave, I don't want to talk about that right now.
Yeah. But to the fact that Derek comes in to specifically like, this is the moment I should be calling Dave out about his hate crime in the past. Like, no, you got a murder to solve. That's a conversation you can have later if you have to have it at all.
And the funny thing is, he's the same age as the guy who was castrated.
Yeah.
Okay, he's the same
age. He's a little younger. He's a little younger, but yes.
But relatively similar in age, okay?
Yeah, I think they're 10 years off. Because remember, you got to remember, the guy who was castrated, he went to high school in the 60s, in the early 60s. And no, probably not 10 years. So mm-hmm. David would have been like the late 60s for high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're not that far apart.
They're not that far.
But it is a world where the civil rights movement is just barely hitting.
Absolutely.
And don't tell me Italians didn't hate.
Oh, no, of course they did. No.
The
N-word,
you know.
I would never, under any circumstances, say that it was not an accurate representation of the racial politics of the time in the episode.
No,
but the fact that David, just the fact that David Rossi has come so far to act like he is still culpable for something he did when he was 15 is a little crazy.
Well, no. I can see Joe Montaigne, like the Rossi's character.
Oh, no, you're right. I'm sorry. I should have made that clear.
Stop that. Okay, Rossi's character, he now feels really, really guilty about it, and he can't get it out of his mind.
Yes, and, but why like, does the show there. And Derek feel that way?
Yeah, but why is Derek blaming him for something that he did 30 or 40 years ago?
40 years ago. Well, yeah, 40-some years ago, because David Rossi's pushing 60.
You know, like I mean, this was a time, for heaven's sakes. It's like, okay, maybe Derek doesn't know. Okay, so Derek is like all of those other millennials or whatever, who doesn't know anything about anything and decides everybody 100 years ago should have thought exactly like he does now.
He was, everybody in the past is more racist than they are in the present.
Yeah, as bad as it is now.
It was worse in the past.
It was just so much acceptable.
Worse. Yeah.
It was just like
people got away with it.
Well, you didn't think about it. No, it's a consciousness raising exercise.
Yep.
You know, and the one over race began after World War II. Mm-hmm. Then gender starts in the 60s and the 70s a little bit. We don't have major marches or anything really until the 80s. And remember, you've got Kennedy's assassination. You've got
MLK. You've got Kennedy II getting killed.
All things that white folks can focus on. Because remember, you're still getting the it's Kennedy who says, you know, and it's Johnson who gets this bill passed.
Yep.
So, and that's like the mid-60s. So, for Dave to be doing this, yes, he should be ashamed of something he did in the past. But why is the show, that's the thing.
Why is the message of the show so hard on David Rossi? Why do they have Derek be so hard on David Rossi?
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. And that's what felt weird about the episode. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah,
the show should have been more understanding that it's like, yeah, David Rossi was a characteristically bad guy, like everybody was at that time, but he's worked on it and he is working on it. So why are you giving him the stink eye episode?
Yeah, because I can understand why the murderer is pissed off at Dave. Yeah, I'll bet you that's what you did, didn't you? Because he was castrated by guys just like Dave Rossi.
Just like David Rossi. Well, less ethnic, but yes.
Yeah, they were all white.
They were all because very of where
they are. But the point is, you know, but the point that you could make is that had David Rossi been with those guys,
would he have stopped?
Would he have done the same thing?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I mean, because what Rossi did is pretty bad. It's one thing to lock a guy in a closet, in your locker, but then he pees on it. Well,
it's disgusting. Yeah.
It was totally and completely. But remember, you know, after all, he has all these mob friends too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
he hung with juvenile delinquents and scumbags. Like,
well, he was part of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he left and he joined the army to get away from that life. And then he, you know, went and the Marines. He's a Marine.
He's the Marine.
But yeah, he joined the Marines to get away from that life. And then he came back and he became an FBI agent. Right, but it's like there was as we saw in the evidence set in Rhode Island, he could have gone down that road.
Yeah,
quite easily.
And Derek has been with him for how many years now?
6 years.
They have spent
every day together
for six years. Why is Derek doing this? Yeah, it makes no sense to have Derek do this. Everything
is with okay. I'm going to say something.
The murderer,
works.
Everything. It's these little stupid things that actually take away from the impact of the episode.
It really does. And the weird part is, right? I don't think you need Derek to, like, give him a pass and morally justify that you're a good man now. You don't need to do a scene like that. You just have to not have Derek be so obviously betrayed by David, like, looking like he's been personally betrayed by David Rossi in that scene. Yeah. You just need to cut that out.
Yeah. It's not a big thing. I mean, Derek can be sort of disgusted by what he did in the past. But
he doesn't have to do it in that way. The way they have him do it and the way that is the message of the episode is, oof.
Yeah. Whereas, no, you have to have... The message of the episode comes from the murderer.
Yeah.
Because he was so destroyed by that.
Yeah.
That he was willing to kill his son's girlfriend.
Yeah. Although I've got a, what do you call it? Such a ugh episode. But I'm going to make the weirdest complaint I've ever made. So please bear with me because of how much fun I always make of Garcia. How is this the first time in history Garcia hasn't immediately gotten all of someone's medical records? Because they find out that the dad has been taking testosterone for the past 25 years at least.
Yeah.
And how come she doesn't immediately dig into that that medical record and find out, oh, that's not his biological son?
Yeah.
And by the way, I know this is going to sound terrible. And if I'm a bad person for suggesting this edit, feel free to tell me. But do you want to know what have really made this guy's anger, like, justified the point of boiling over? If the son was obviously biracial like Derek.
Well, yeah, that would have made it worse, but I
that
think...
No, but I'm saying then you would totally get how it would drive him to murder.
Well, except that would mean his wife would have had to have had sex with some white guy, which would have mean she would have had to have been raped.
No, she wouldn't have had to have been raped. I don't think she, like, no. She's not, I'm saying she could have just had an affair with who happened to be a white guy.
No, I don't buy that one. Like, I don't know how you do that unless she's raped by some white guy. And then that would just make him angrier.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I don't know that she has to have been raped by a white guy.
People meet people.
Even back then, people met people.
Yes, I know, but I just don't see it because he was born after they were married.
I know.
So I just don't see her doing that to her husband.
But she slept with somebody.
Yeah, but that's okay. But she would have slept with some black guy, not some white guy. Okay. I'm sorry, but I just...
No, it's fine. I don't think that would work.
And if you had, like, unless, like, you could, if you really wanted to make this episode, like, let's destroy the whole thing, right? Yeah, yeah. You make her raped by one of these guys as well.
Yeah.
Not only do they castrate him, but they rape his girlfriend.
That would have been especially awful. Yeah.
Well, but that would have been...
And
I would have
bought
that.
Yeah, and then, of course, the guy's going to get his murderous revenge.
Yeah. I would have bought that in a minute.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
So, I buy this, you know?
Yeah, that would have been rough.
And,
but, yeah, and it's like...
But fundamentally, the scenes
with the main... Oh, yeah, but you're right.
Rossi does agree not to tell the son.
I know, and that was very nice.
Yes.
And what I really liked in this episode, and I gotta say, it's like all of the scenes with the killer are so good.
Oh yeah, he is so
such a powerful performance.
Yeah, because he's slowly, that's what's so funny, is that, yeah, you see his anger, you see, and it's a slow, see the rage that he's been living with all his life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it in the beginning,
nope.
Right? It just gets slowly worse and worse until you get it to the end, and where you know that his rage is so much that he is willing to kill. I mean, it has to be horrible. His son's girlfriend, who happens to be
Yeah, the daughter of one of the guys who attacked
of
him.
One of the
yeah.
guys who raped him, who castrated him.
Well, and the thing is, and I think what I love about that final scene is that he, for his, and it's such a great scene for this actor, he, for his whole life, has, what do you call it, justified this to himself.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, this horrible thing was done to me, and I am full of rage. And when he is actually faced with the horror of it and what he has done to his son,
yeah,
he has that moment of like, of course I didn't. Of course this isn't justified. Of course I didn't, you know, deserve this. Of course I wasn't allowed to kill these women. You know, of course I didn't have any reason to do that. And he's totally fine with the four guys he killed. But these two women, like, right at the end, you're like, no, of course it's not justified. Of course, I just, please don't tell him. Like, please don't tell my son.
He
feels the guilt of it right at the end
for
the first time when he faced down the horror of what he did to his son.
Yeah.
And he realizes that, honestly, like, in that moment, it probably, like, seeing his son with this woman, the horrible cosmic coincidence that this was the daughter of one of the guys,
sent him over the edge.
Sent him over the edge. But it's more than that. It also, because it's paired with his resentment over it not being his son.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And it's like, and that's why, because he realizes that killing this woman wasn't just an attack on her father. It was an attack on his son, too. Right? And that's what he can't live with. And that's why he has to try and, like, hide the guilt from his son. Because the real thing he can't live with is not just that he was doing this to her and her father. He was doing it to his son. And he just can't accept that. And he breaks down. And it's so good.
No, it was a really, really good performance, except that the things that we complained about, basically the Derek stuff is the thing, and the fact that, you know, she doesn't find it out sooner, because they could have still used that. That would have worked out like Garcia. Yeah. So, yeah, but the Garcia, I would just sweep under the rug.
It's not a
the
big,
Derek I mean, thing should have been handled differently. And
I agree with that.
And as I said, and if you wanted to, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, you could have done other things, but I don't see any. Because when you came up with yours, I have to come up with alternate, because I couldn't buy it. But in this case, right, particularly, since she married this man, right?
And she knows.
She married this man and she knew what had happened to him. No, she would never, ever, ever sleep with a white man.
Yeah, you're right.
But, you know?
Oh, God, if that had been an extra, ugh. Yeah.
But that would have made it even. This is bad enough. You don't need anything more.
You don't need it, you to, make left, it to make it even worse.
Yeah, you could have left the Derek, like that. Basically, what you do with Derek is that Derek goes, "I can't handle this.
Yeah,
I can't. This is one thing I can't do, because what happened to the guy was so horrible. Derek's got to be just like most of us. Yeah, he was right to kill those guys. He had a perfect right to kill those guys when they did this to him. It could have been so horrible for Derek.
Yeah.
Right? That he just couldn't take part.
That he
and
takes
there's
himself
nothing wrong
out
with
of
that.
The case.
He basically takes himself out of the equation. Yeah. I could have, I would have bought that easily. Yeah. It would have been more honest for Derek, because if there's one thing he understands these things, right?
Oh, yeah.
God only knows he lived with being a biracial. He lived with being biracial growing up in Chicago in the projects with a white mother, you know?
Yep.
So he's fully aware of all of the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Not that this guy is going through, but what he was raised, because he's not that much older than the son.
Nope.
Right? And what he was raised with was bad enough. And then the potential that if he had been born like 15 years earlier, he could have been hung up and castrated.
Yep.
It's too
like
much.
The kid.
Yeah.
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 Just like
did
the
they?
Kid had been all those years ago. Did they what?
Okay. I just have a question. They didn't play the song Strange Fruit, did they?
No,
at the end.
At the end of the episode, yeah.
At the very end, and I thought it was, okay.
Yeah, I was walking just away. They play Strange Fruit.
Yeah, and the funny thing was, is for some unknown reason.
Great recording and everything.
Pardon?
great recording of it and everything.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not sure how. Like, I don't know why. It jarred me. That's what I was going to say. It, for some unknown reason, the music jarred me.
Really?
At that end. I don't know who was singing it either, because they don't tell you that in these episodes.
No, of course not.
You have to go looking at it in the
You have to go to IMDb and check out the
who did the music, yeah, and maybe it's there, right? Because I still
think it isn't even always there.
Yeah, I know. So excuse me.
It's okay. No, but it's like there's so much powerful stuff in this episode, and I would say 80% is that man's performance.
Oh yeah.
Like the son's good too. The son's really good too.
Really, really good.
The wife is good. I mean, everybody, it's just
what
the show does with Derek this week doesn't serve the episode.
No.
And it just kind of hurts, as you say, it really hurts the episode's theme and the whole point.
Like,
of the episode.
I found that it did.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's more powerful if Derek just is overwhelmed by this thing.
Yeah. Like, I could see that. I mean, if I was in his shoes, I'd be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
It just seems to make more sense to be overwhelmed, right?
Exactly.
I think Janine did a really good job of this.
Yeah.
To a large extent. It's just, there were just weird parts of it, right? That's the only, and I'm not sure why she did that. Maybe Derek needed so many minutes, you know? And, well, no, seriously,
no,
right?
I mean, that's how contracts work. I'm not going to say you're wrong.
No.
He might have needed X amount of screen time, so they just gave him something to do. Whether it was useful for the episode or not.
Yeah, but they could have given him something different that would have fit better.
Yeah, fit the themes of the episode more effectively.
And still given him enough time.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It's like, this episode, it's still going to be one of the best ones of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
But the crazy part is, it's this episode that gets within how much of being great. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. But yes, and she did win an Image Award for this one. Janine Sherman-Barois.
Ah, she did.
Yeah, I believe she was either nominated for or won an Image Award for this one. And I say more power to you, because it's... I mean, I wish I would like to hear that the actor got an award, but if her script got an award, you know, more power to her. That's fantastic, because it deserved it. All right.
Is there an awards section on here? No.
I don't know. All right, but you can just look up her name later. Let's focus on the important thing now, which is, what are we going to be talking about next week?
Okay. 10 is The Caller.
Yes, The Caller. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah,
the Are You Alone in the House, mm-hmm, and the kids mm-hmm. being murdered, and mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
11, Bully.
Bully. Is that the one where the guy's going and getting revenge for the bullying and the... over the kid who was driven to suicide and blah, 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 blah. And we see Jeannie Triplehorn's family.
Well, it doesn't say here, but I... Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Next up.
You got it. Take a guess which one this is.
You know I can't, so just tell me.
Sorry.
Tell me.
The Black Queen.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh. You know, and the thing is, I stand by my, you know, statement that the Black Queen has maybe the least comprehensible line of dialogue the show has ever written. Okay. And it is insane that Thomas Gibson is the one who delivers it.
Yes, we will talk
he's
about
usually
that.
So good about policing things.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
My God. The Black Queen. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to talk about the Black Queen.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, next week is going to be a hum doozy, which is not a saying. All right. Join us back here for that next week. If you are doing the homework, that is, for the record, episodes 9:10 to 9:12. But until then, if you would like to reach out, if you have any questions for us, if you have any suggestions, if you too are frustrated by the show's infantilization of, well, the character Spencer Reed's self-infantilization, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. Obviously, we would love to hear from you. We will, let's see. Oh, yes, and if you're listening to us on a podcast client, be sure to both subscribe, because that helps, and give us a rating, because that really helps. And if you like the show, tell other people. We will see you back here next week for all of that. Mm-hmm. But until then, I just want to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.